Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Don here. And tonight, hopefully, we're going to have Marty Walsh of Supertramp. And if you want to call in and talk to Marty, you can call in at 646-478-0999. And while we're waiting to get Marty on the phone, I'm sure everyone is enjoying the nice hot weather. And it seems like the summer's never ending, and I'm one that I can't stand the heat, so I'm not too happy with it. But I think Joanne and Marty on the phone. Hi, Joanne. How are you?
Hi, John. Hi. We got Marty Walsh on the line.
Hey, hello, Marty.
Guys.
You were talking
about.
Yeah,
I have you.
You were talking about the gorgeous weather where Marty was out having a ball there. That's why we couldn't get.
Yeah, I was like losing my mind. I'm like going, I'm just out, you know, doing stuff. And then, oh gosh. Anyway, well, I'm glad we're here.
Yes, thank you so much, everybody. Welcome Marty Walsh to the show. He is definitely a guitar virtuoso. And why? Because he has been on every song you've probably ever heard before and didn't even know it was him. And Marty,
That's being very kind.
Yeah, and Marty is probably more well known to you for his last stint with Supertramp, but he has so many artists he's worked with, and like I said, songs that you probably don't even know that he was on. So, Marty, how are you today, honey? Thank you for joining us. We appreciate
it. Well, I'm loving. I'm doing really, really well.
Good.
And you know, we're on the East Coast, you know, and
yes.
It's like we got these 3 days. And I've been saying, hey, okay, September, we need 3 more days. I've been going, come on, in August, I'm going, 3 days in September, just give me 3 days.
So
and
it's
here
your
we got
fault. It's
so
your,
I'm very happy.
It's your fault we're having this little heat wave here.
Yeah, we like that heat wave. I like
it.
I
was enjoying the cool stuff. I like the cool stuff.
Well, there you go.
Well, a part of me, I'm just getting over strep throat, so part of me, if I'm not sounding wonderful. But John and I are, like I said, happy to have you on the show. And for our callers, Marty is a fantastic guitar player. So, Marty, let's start out with Supertramp. Well, not even Supertramp. You've been playing since, what, 76, I believe? Professionally.
Well, yeah. I mean, a little before then. You know, I grew up in L.A., musical family. Father was a musician. My brothers were both in the music business. I'm the youngest of four.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm doing my thing and trying to get my craft together, you know, being a guitarist. And fortunately, being in L.A., there were opportunities available for touring when I was very young. I'm 23 years old. That was, well, I didn't want to talk about the year. But I was on tour with Eddie Kendricks.
Wow.
I did a bunch of work with Eddie and some of the guys were studio guys from Detroit, Muriel Jones and Eddie Willis.
Well, you were
weren't
you originally a drummer though? I mean, and then switched over to guitar?
Oh, myself. I started on drums, yeah, when I was like 12 years old. And then my brother had, you know, I'm 15 and my brother says, "Dude, you're a freaking guitar. You're a Walsh." Sell the drums, get a guitar. That's what you should be doing. So that's what I did.
Great. Well,
mid '70s. I'm working with Eddie, and then I toured with a group called Seals and Crofts, kind of a artsy, folky kind of
the
duo.
Marie, Jeez, makes me feel fine.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, they were great. And I mean, you know, we played all the big gigs. We were playing the sheds all around the country, and they were very, very hot at the time. They had a single out. On the first tour I did with them, they had a single out called Get Closer. That was like,
they had
all their success, and then they came out with this new record called Get Closer, which was really, really big.
Yeah.
And that kind of recharged them, and away we went, you know.
Right. That was great. So who sang the female vocals on that? Who sang the female vocals on
that? Oh, that was Carolyn Willis.
Carolyn
Willis was basically a studio singer in L.A., and she sang on that record, and then they went on the road. She came on the road with us, you know.
Well, you had a similar experience. You were doing a demo, and then you blew up after that, right? I mean, you were doing the demo.
Guitaristically, it's kind of an interesting story, because what happened was my brother Dan was a successful songwriter in the 70s.
Yeah, why don't you ask me what other songs has he written other than the?
The big one that he kind of like hung his hat on was a song called Temptation Eyes. It was by the Grassroots.
Are you kidding me? That's my favorite song.
Oh, I know.
It's a
great song. You should hear some of the songs that didn't make it that he wrote.
I can't believe he wrote that.
Yeah, so he was with another writer, Michael Price, and Price and Walsh was the writing team, and they were signed to a producer by the name of Steve Barry.
Mm.
And Steve wrote like Secret Agent Man and in the 60s, and then he had a bunch of he was successful as a producer, and he was working out of ABC Dunhill. So after Seals and Cross, I kind of made this decision that I wasn't going to tour again, because you have to be in town to get studio work.
Right.
And so I kind of hung up the road for a while and concentrated on just trying to do sessions in Los Angeles. And of course, you know, I was kind of a nobody. And so, you know, it's hard to break into that scene. And,
yeah, you were ready
and,
for me.
But I was playing on a lot of demos, you know.
Right.
And so my brother wrote a song for a woman named Yvonne Elliman, who she became famous when Eric Clapton made his comeback, and she was singing in his band. And then she had a piece of music in Jesus Christ Superstar, and I think it was that was it.
If I Can't Have You in the same
Right. So Yvonne is doing her thing, and my brother's written this song called Love Pains. And it's going to be the single for Yvonne.
Right.
So it's 1979, I think. And so I play. My brother hires me to play on this demo. So I just go into, you know, I go to wherever, and I play this guitar part on this demo. And apparently the producer liked the part. And so they had the arranger, Michael and Marty, and actually write the part into the chart for the session. For the master recording, which I wasn't going to be a part of, you know, I'm just the demo guy.
Demo.
They're not going to hire me to play on the record.
Exactly.
But they were doing it. They were doing the session at Seals and Cross Studio. Now, I had worked with Seals and Cross, and I knew the studio. I knew the engineer at the studio, so I was very comfortable there. And I just bought an amplifier. This is guitar time. Couple of minutes for guitar players out there. I just bought an amplifier called a Roland JC120, and that amplifier had a chorus in it, had an effect in it that ran in stereo. And at this point in time, all guitar players were playing in mono. They were all mono guitars. I mean, mono guitar amps. So on sessions, they would always hire two guitar players. They went to hire the guys for that session. You know, on the session were Jeff and Mike Picaro, a guy named Jay Graydon, who was a big, you know, studio guitar player, and who I knew for years because he and my brother were very, very tight when they were in high school. And a guy named Michael Amardian was doing the arrangements, and you know, he had written this part. Well, they went to hire the other guitar players. They called three guys. None of them are available on this day that this session was going to happen. So my brother went to bat for me and said, why don't you just bring my kid brother in? He'll play the part on the single that you like, And then you know, we can do whatever, you know, we'll do a couple more songs. And if he doesn't cut it, you can always replace him.
Right.
But anyway, I had this amplifier. I'd just gotten it. And the speaker's configuration ran in stereo. So I went to the engineer, and at the beginning of the session, I went to the engineer, Joey Bogan, and I said, Joey, put two microphones on this, which was unheard of at the time, and pan it left and right in the mix, and you're going to pee in your pants. And so he did. He took me up on it because I knew him. And he goes, okay, I'll do that. And we went in and we cut that track on Love Pains, and we went back to listen to it. And look, it's an effect where my guitar is as wide as the stereo spectrum. And everybody was sitting there like going, whoa,
wow,
what
right.
is this, right?
Right.
And so because of that, all of a sudden, bang, my phone's ringing off the hook.
Right.
I mean, that song was a hit. You know, I think it charted up to number 19 on Billboard. And
wow.
you know, and it, my name shows up on that record, and everybody's calling.
Is there any other songs that you use that effect on that we would know more popular? Because unfortunately,
well, yeah, I probably used it on a lot of stuff at that time. You know,
I can't recall Love Pains. I mean, I know Yvonne Elliman's other stuff, but I just can't recall Love Pains off the top of my head. How that?
Yeah,
goes.
Well, go after we have
yes,
after the show. Go check
it.
Check it out. Look, the guitar part. The key to the whole thing was that guitar part was crucial. It was hot in the mix. It's big in the mix. I mean, the thing starts out with Jeff and me and Mike, and I mean, my guitar is as loud as anything. So I was driving the whole train on that song,
right.
And that's what kind of put me over. But I mean, I used that amp for a number of years, and yeah, you know, whenever I was working, I was having guys mic it up in stereo, and it was the way that it was. It was just the way I worked, you know.
You created that signature sound. There you go. That's what
seemed, you know, it seemed like it, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody has a signature sound. That's the funny thing. It's like,
right.
I don't sound like anybody else, and nobody sounds like me.
Exactly.
And, you know, nobody can sound like Jeff Beck, you know.
Right.
Nobody can sound like Steve Lukather. I mean, you know, it's like everybody's got a thing, you know?
Right. Well, if anybody wants to give a call and talk to Marty, please call us at 646-478-0999. And in the meantime, I'm going to keep rambling on. John, you're a guitar player. What do you think of that effect?
I got a question. I think that's great. And was it a stereo guitar, or it just kind of put it into a stereo in the amp? And what
kind
of guitar did you use on that session?
Yeah.
No, the guitar that I used was just a standard. It was a 59 Gibson Esquire that had been modified.
Yes. Wow.
And but it was plugged into this amplifier that had just come out. I had seen Buzzy Featon, the guitarist Buzzy Featon, using one playing live. That's when I found out about it.
Mm.
And you know, it was made by Roland, and what they did was they took this chorusing idea that they had come up with, and they had made a chorusing pedal, you know, that people were using, but that chorusing
right.
pedal, it was chorusing on one side and it was dry on the other, whereas the amplifier, they figured out a way to make the chorusing go in between the speakers. Now, ironically,
oh,
what
great.
You're talking about with Supertramp.
Yeah.
When they played there, when Supertramp played their Wurlitzer piano parts, they were playing that through a Roland JC120, just like I was using on my guitar.
Wow.
That was part of their Wurlitzer sound.
Their sound too. Yeah.
Was that
a
guitar amp or was that a keyboard amp at the time?
It was really, I guess, made to be a guitar amp. You know,
okay,
but it was a solid state amp. It didn't have tubes, which was kind of weird. But so I guess you could plug anything into it and it would sound cool, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's great.
Now, speaking of Eddie Kendricks, I mean, I want to stay on Eddie. You did a lot of work with Eddie Money, rest his soul, unfortunately.
Oh, Eddie.
Yes. I mean, that
was
amazing working with him. I mean, he had some great songs too. And I mean, were you a contributing writer or just coming in as
no,
a writer?
No, I'll tell you how that happened. That was a couple of years later, and now I'm kind of like this known commodity in L.A. I'm working a lot.
Good.
And a friend of mine, Gary Ferguson, is a drummer, and I had played with Gary since we were young kids, and he gets the Eddie Money gig. He's going to play drums on this album.
Mm.
He's played live with Eddie,
mm-hmm.
but so he had the touring gig with Eddie,
mm.
and so he's going to be playing drums on this new record called No Control, which was a huge record.
Right.
And anyway, they're rehearsing in Los Angeles. There's a guy named Tom Dowd who was producing, and Tom Dowd is legendary. He produced Clapton. He produced Layla. I mean, he did Derek and the Dominoes. He's huge,
wow.
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So Tom Dowd's this iconic dude. And there was a guy named Andy Johns that was engineering this record.
Mm.
Andy had, like, done Freaking the Stones and Led Zeppelin. I mean, you know, he's a British guy.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys were the biggest, they're rock
yeah.
and roll royalty. You yeah, know what I mean?
Some amazing people.
So I get this call. Gary Ferguson calls me, and he says, Marty, I'm down here at Leeds Rehearsal Facility with Eddie Money. And I've been telling him about you. And he said, I told Tom Dowd, look, if you want to get the best rhythm guitar player, get this guy. We work really well together. The guy that was in Eddie's band, Jimmy Lyon, great guitar player, fabulous guitarist, had been with Eddie forever, and a really great soloist. But as most guitar players, his rhythm playing was somewhat stock.
Mm.
It was there was nothing new about it, you know. So Gary brings me in to audition basically for Tom Dowd and Andy Johns and Eddie, and I go down to this rehearsal facility, and you know, I mean, I plug my guitar in, and they're gonna do this song called Shaken, and I say, okay, yeah, they're gonna do Shaken, and I'm looking at these guys, and I'm saying, okay. I got to do something cool.
Yeah.
I can't, this is a really simple song. It's got three chords. I can't just play the three chords.
Mm.
I got to do something that makes them go, wow.
Right.
And so I came up with a figure. I came up with this guitar line. It's actually kind of buried in the mix, but I came up with it and I played it. And when I played it, you know, it was obviously like a very musical. Well, I think it's musical, but they liked it a lot.
Mm.
They liked it was a single note kind of a thing that wasn't a stock power chord kind of line that everybody else on the planet would have played.
Right.
And
right.
so when I did that, you know, that kind of sowed my fate with them because they dug it so much. They said, okay, cool, sessions at RCA on Sunset and blah, blah, blah. And we went there and, you know, for the first session I did, you know, we did Shaken and they said, you got to stay on board. And so we did this record called Think I'm in Love, which was
That's
a big hit
right.
Eddie had
yep.
off that record.
Yeah.
And you know, and I basically was the guy, Jimmy and I were playing together, but I was kind of the guy that was holding down all of the rhythm stuff. I was basically like the rhythm guitar player on a lot of those tracks, you know.
Right. I was gonna ask you more rhythm than lead, right? When you play.
Yeah, because the rhythm guitar is where you make the money.
Right. You need
solo,
the rhythm guitar.
Lead guitar, there's a million guys that can play lead guitar.
Right.
There's a million guys.
Right.
And because that's the only thing they've ever tried to do.
Right.
And then you ask them to play, ask them to come up with a creative part. I made a living because I could come up with creative parts on rhythm guitar. I could come up with creative rhythm guitar parts
that made
people's records, you know?
Right. Well, the rhythm guitar is throughout the whole song. The lead is, you know, just the riff and the lead. That's it, you know? So,
the
rhythm guitar makes the song, so.
And the other thing about it too is that in order to, it's a different mindset, you know. People play solos and they can kind of live in their own world. Whereas when your focus is the rhythm part, you got to be nailing it with the drummer, man.
Oh,
you got to be nailing it with the guitar
yeah.
player. You
yeah.
got to be nailing the feel of the thing. The
touched.
Overall feel is coming yeah. from you.
Right.
And so some guys can, you know, they're burning soloists, but you ask them to play rhythm and they don't have the mindset
right.
to feel that good, you know.
Right.
I know all kinds of guys like that.
Right.
You know?
Well,
Tear
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, it's
you
funny.
Know, but,
I got a little Eddie Money story for you. I wish we could have got him on the show, but unfortunately, you
know,
yeah, it would have been thrilling. But when I lost my voice about 4 years ago, I did Baby Hold On to Me in a cover band. And I have to say, I gave myself chills. And I don't give myself chills very often when I sing. So, I mean, it was, I don't mean to use a pun on the money, but it was on the money, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I sounded a little bit like this, but not as severe as this. But, you know, it's like, baby, hold on to me, you know? And I said, hold on. And I literally gave myself chills, literally gave myself chills.
But you know something, and you know something, and Joanne, that song just speaks.
I know.
You know,
I know.
When he passed away, Bob Lefsetz, who does his newsletter and his podcast, who I'm a big fan of, you know, I sent him a note. I said, you know, I told him about being, you know, that thing and Eddie and Tom and Andy and all that. And I closed it. I said, listen, Eddie Money was genuine.
Yes.
He was absolutely genuine, and that's why his music reached people. It was very, very genuine stuff.
And very unique,
you know?
Voice. Very unique voice, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Very unique.
Yeah, he was the real deal, man. He was the real
deal. Yep, definitely. He will definitely
And a sweetheart of a guy.
He did
see Sweet
that,
guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really nice guy, you know?
Well,
some people you meet, and they're like just... You're going, yeah, okay, so you're the big cheese. Yeah, who cares, you know?
Right.
But this cat was, you know, he was a sweet cat. He was just great.
Well,
sad to say. And, you know, and I saw that his wife posted a thing that, you know, he was going in for kind of a routine thing to have a heart stent replaced.
Mm.
But that's how he passed away.
Well,
Something kind of went haywire in the surgery. It wasn't cancer.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. Well, rock in peace, Eddie Money. We will miss you. Your music will live on forever, that is for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you had the pleasure of playing with him, so that's amazing. So let me ask you, Air Supply, what did you write for Air Supply?
What's that?
Air Supply. What did you write for Air Supply?
Oh, Air Supply. So that came about in the early 90s. I'm working with a kid named Billy Sherwood.
Mm.
Billy Sherwood is now and has been for the last many years a member of Yes.
He sounded familiar, yeah.
Yeah, and he was he'd been really tight with Chris Squire back in the 80s.
Mm.
He wrote some songs for the album Union. And he's been in the Yes camp for a long time. But Billy and I always loved his work, and we sat down and we wrote a bunch of material in the early 90s, 93, 94.
Mm.
And all of that material actually surfaced on an album out of a German record label called MTM, and the band was called The Key. And that was just me and Billy. I mean, he was playing bass, I'm playing guitar, and he was playing drums, and we were singing all the vocals and writing all the tunes. But in the meantime, we were also doing some session stuff at his studio. He had a studio in Van Nuys. So you know, he'd get these gigs, and he'd say, hey, man, you know, come on over, you know, tonight, and instead of writing tunes, we're going to work with so-and-so.
Right.
Well, you know, and then he'd have some artist there, because he produces stuff outside of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'd be like, okay, he and I are, like, working with this artist, and people are paying us, and that's great, you know. But he wound up hooking up with Graham Russell of Air Supply.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing something with Graham, and Graham came by when Billy and I were writing for this album that we were doing that came out on MTM.
Uh-huh.
And Graham dug it. He dug what was going down. We were working on a song, and Graham just, like, comes in and, you know, because Billy was working on him, working with something else on him. And then Graham says, well, we should write something together. So we said, yeah. So we sat down, and you know, a couple of days later, he came back, and we knocked out a thing that was very, very cool. It was called the song was called Feel for Your Love.
Mm.
It was on an album called News from Nowhere that came out in you know, 94, something like that, 95 maybe, and it didn't do much in the States, but it was huge apparently. It did quite well in the Pacific Rim, in the Asian countries, you know, where Air Supply, those guys were touring a lot. They were they were, you know, they were all over that area of the world touring at that time and were extremely popular.
Yeah.
So the record actually did really, really well. But then I'm getting my ASCAP statements and there's nothing in there. And I go, what's going on? And I spoke with the people at the record company, and you know, this is the record business. Who knows what the deal is? How to get the truth out of people's stuff. But
why weren't you getting royalties? Why weren't you getting royalties for it?
Well, we should have, based on the numbers that Graham gave me. Graham told me what it sold. He told said it said 750,000 copies. I'm like, dude, this is great. So,
yeah.
But you know, the problem was getting the money out of the Pacific Rim. Getting the money out of there. Now, I did do a deal. You know, my friend Roxanne Seaman hooked me up with, so she's a songwriter in L.A.
Mm.
She hooked me up with a company to do a deal to collect my royalties, and they did, but it was nowhere near those kind of numbers. It wasn't based on that. So I don't know if it didn't sell those or if they shipped those and nobody actually bought them or, you know, who knows,
but
it's hard because it's in Thailand and I mean, you know, Japan, and I mean, Japan should probably be able to collect pretty well. China, I mean, you know, it's not easy to get your money out of there.
Yeah, but ASCAP.
But it was a great record.
Yeah,
great record. We had a great time doing it.
Yeah.
And we cut the track. I mean, we were in the studio cutting the track with some of the guys that Billy had in his band, you know, another band that he did at the time, Mark Williams on drums, you know, John Williams' kid, and I mean, it was great, you know.
Yeah, but ASCAP is worldwide. I wonder why they weren't picking up the plays.
I know. I mean, I was getting information from two sides.
Yeah.
People were saying, well, it sold this. People were saying, no, it didn't do anywhere near that.
And then
people were saying, well, it did pretty well, but we can't get the money out. Or it'll come, but, you know, did it ever make it? No. You know?
Right.
I mean, I tell, look, I teach at Berklee College of Music now.
I know.
And
I'm
I tell my students, I say, look, the music business is like this because you're freelance. I mean, first, you know, you have to get the gig, right? So you got to you have to be good at your craft. You have to get the gig. Okay. Then you have to get paid for the gig.
Right.
Then the check's got to cash, you know?
People
this is the music business.
Right.
There are
people
a lot of people that have written a lot of bad checks in this business,
right.
You know
people,
what I mean?
People don't understand that it's show business, you know. It's not just walk in, sing, and walk away, you know. There is a lot to it. I'm very curious about the song you did with Agatha from ABBA. What'd you do with her?
Oh, from Agnetha Faltskog?
Oh, I pronounced it wrong. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. From ABBA, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I had been, you know, it's just, this is just the way this stuff works. And this is great show you're doing.
Oh,
and I love talking
about this stuff
because it's just,
we love having
it's just, well, it shows you how happenstance all of this stuff is.
Exactly.
In 86, I wind up getting the John Fogerty gig.
To
tour with John. Now, once again, just like the first big record I played on, John Robinson is playing drums. Alan Pascoe is playing keyboards. Neil Steubenhaus is playing good bass.
Mm.
These guys are super busy studio guys. I know them, but they're like, you know, they had done this record, and there were a lot of great, great guitar players that they, you know, John did a record in 86 called Eye of the Zombie that you never heard of, and he buried it, and nobody's ever heard it, and that's probably a good thing.
Really?
But he had center field, and now he's going to go on the road.
Mm.
So John Robinson offers the gig to a guy named Dan Huff, who's the hottest guitar player in town. Dan is the guy, right, at that time.
Right.
Dan turns it down. He's too busy. He offers it to Mike Landau, who's also, you know, he's neck and neck with Dan.
So there's these
really, really hot guys, and there's 12 other guys like me that are around, you know, but those two guys get the first calls. They both turn it down. So he offers it to a guy named Dean Parks, and Dean Parks is a unbelievable guitarist that played on a million Steely Dan records. He's one of the greatest guitar players in L.A., and he's been doing it for 50 years or something.
Nice.
Dean is on the fence about going. Andy Brower, who's a cartage rental guy that I knew, I was one of his clients, as were all these other guitar players, found out that Dean was not thinking about not doing it. He called me up and he said, "Mark, this is a roundabout way of getting to this, Joanne." He says, "Marty, you got to go. You have to, you know, this is your gig. You should be on this in this band. You're the guy for this."
Yeah.
I call John Robinson. I get the gig. We go on the road. We come back. John and I start writing songs together with Billy Sherwood, ironically.
Yeah.
So it's 88, and we're writing these tunes, and we're trying to do stuff, and we're trying to get a deal with Warner Records.
Yeah.
So we're doing all this stuff. John gets called to do an album with Agnieszka Falskog of ABBA. She's doing a solo record.
Yeah.
So Peter Cetera is producing it, and John and I had kind of, you know, aside from Billy, we had come up with this other idea for a song, and we had worked it up, and we didn't really have, we kind of had an idea for the hook and some things, and we had some lyrics and stuff like that, and we had kind of a rough sketch kind of demo.
Mm.
So John plays it for Peter Cetera and Agnetta, and they go, "We dig this. We want to do this song." So he calls me and I go, "Dude, we got to finish the lyric." I call Franny Goldie, who's this great songwriter from L.A., who's very, very successful. I go, "Franny, I got this project. We need a lyric like tomorrow."
Yeah.
You know, and I go, "They're going in the studio to cut this thing. We need to get this thing done. Can you, I'm going to. You know, somehow I got her a cassette or something like that of the track.
Suspense is killing me. The suspense is killing me. What song is it? Come on, come on, come on.
the song title?
Yeah, what song was it? Yeah.
Oh, my God, I thought you already knew.
No, that's right.
Now you're going to, you threw me for a loop and I'm going to forget the title. It's called, come on, Joanne. Can you look it up?
I'm on my
phone.
Well, I know Frida did something going on, but I don't know what Agnes did. That's what I'm.
I should be on the. Look, I'm having a brain problem. Agnetha Falskog, the album came out in 80. I can go find it on my computer real quick.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Franny writes the lyric.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Peter calls me up, and he says, "Hey, you know, I love your song. It's cool. You know, we just got to," I had to replace some of the lyric content that I thought, you know, I did some lyric fixes on it. I hope that's okay with you. And, you know, I know, I mean, like, I'm not looking for any part of the song or anything like that. I just want you to know that we did it. And I kind of changed a few things that I thought were cool. And like that, the song is called, hang on, songwriter. Like, I'm looking at my credits here. Songwriter.
I could have did that too.
It was called, hang on. It was called We've Got Away, 1987.
We've Got Away.
We've Got Away, you know?
Yeah, how'd that go? I'm trying to think how that went.
It was a poppy kind of, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It was typical pop 80s, you know.
Yeah.
Power chords and, you know.
Well, guys, listen, our audience out there, if you ever want to know why there were so many amazing hits in the 80s, it's because all these talented, amazing people got together. You got Marty, you got Peter Cetera. I mean, you got all these great producers. I mean, there's no way the song could fail. I mean, this is amazing that so many hits were written in the 80s, and now I know why. I mean, you've been behind so many hits, and the people that have been involved, I mean, you, Donna Summer, or Hard for the Money, I mean, that's a hit. Heart Like Neil Diamond, I mean, Sales of Crook, obviously, was not the 80s, but, I mean, even John Denver you worked with. What did you work with on him?
I did. Greatest man I ever worked with.
Yeah,
John was amazing.
What song was that?
Huh?
What song was that?
The actual single, and he's got a video. I'm in the video that he did.
Really?
Was called "Don't Close Your Eyes Tonight."
Wow.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. You know, that's me and Elizabeth Lammers. Let me just find it here.
Don't close your eyes tonight.
I mean, it's just.
But anyway, yeah, I did this record with John, and he was, what a freaking guy he was, what a sweetheart.
Yeah, I don't think John Denver received the accolades he should have gotten. He really was a talented musician, you know, and excellent songwriter, and I don't think people know that. You know, they just don't for Take Me Home Country.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was quite successful, you know.
Oh, I know he was.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, he had a lot of big records, you know.
Right, and
but
he had that
you know, Americana, good old boy, you know.
Right.
And he wasn't quite country, and he wasn't a.
Right.
He was like a pop kind of country, kind of
right.
this, kind of that, you know.
Right.
But.
Yeah, I know.
That was another one. Roger Nichols, who engineered Steely Dan, called me for that album.
Wow.
Out of the blue, my phone rings, and he's like, "Marty, I'm doing this John Denver record. You got to be on it." I'm like, "Well, okay."
Bye.
And so I go, you know, and John had been through a thing called the S training, EST. It was a thing that everybody was doing. This
I
thing
remember
in the 70s.
That. Yep.
Yeah.
And John was a big S guy. And honestly, I did the S training, and it completely changed my life.
Really?
And when I met John, many years later, I met John, and I said, "Dude, Werner Erhard and that whole S thing was absolutely unbelievable." And we sat and talked about it for about 45 minutes at the session one time. They were doing some overdubs with, you know, keyboards and some things, and I'm at the studio with him, and we sat down at Amigo in North Hollywood and just jawed about that whole bit, you know, because it was a remarkable thing, you know, and I got some bad press, you know, and it turned into kind of like a Hollywood thing. Everybody was like, "Oh, you got to go do this thing," you know,
yeah.
But it was life-changing. It was absolutely life-changing.
Cool.
You know?
Well, before we go on to your Berkeley experience, which you're currently doing, how'd you wind up with Supertramp? I mean, they're a
well,
band. I mean, the drummer's
see,
from California,
well,
I understand.
That, yeah.
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 No, I mean, look, it's. I had a really great career in Los Angeles for
you
a lot
sure
of
did.
Years.
Yes, you
everything,
did.
Everything,
yeah.
everything,
everything,
everything
yeah.
was like, how, you know, being connected to some person involved.
Yeah.
Here's the Supertramp story.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if what we just talked about, my brother wrote a song, I played on it.
Right.
You know, I played on a demo. The Trumpety thing, I mean, I know the drummer who's
right.
doing the thing. So I call
right.
him up and I get that gig. You know, Air Supply, well, I'm working with this Billy, and then Billy's working with Graham, and Graham just happens to come by the studio. Here's he and I, and Billy and I in action, working on this music, and he goes, "We need to write a song." And we're like, "Okay, let's do that," you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Supertramp thing was kind of amazing because here's the story. In high school, I went to a school in Burbank, California. It was a parochial school.
Mm.
I lived in Glendale. My parents had a house in Glendale, California, which bordered Burbank. There was a good friend of mine that lived on my street who went to the public Glendale Public High School, along with two guys who became in big rock bands. Bob Siebenberg, who was the drummer in Supertramp,
mm-hmm.
and Scott Gorham, who was the guitarist in Thin Lizzy.
Mm.
The Thin Lizzy guitar player with the super long hair.
Yep.
Both Scott and Bobby went to Hoover High
mm-hmm.
in Glendale in for high school. Now, my buddy Joe, who I knew, I mean, because I was playing in bands in Burbank, and I'm circulating and around in the Glendale scene, he says, "Hey, you got to come play with these guys." So I went a few times. I went and played music with Bobby and Scott when they were high school kids.
Wow.
You know, Bob was 2 years older than me. He graduates high school, gets married to his high school sweetheart, and moves straight to London.
Mm.
Scott Gorham, Scott is Bobby married Scott's sister, Vicky.
Oh,
so
wow.
Vicky Gorham and Bobby are married. They go to London. Scott graduates high school, goes straight to London. So these guys disappear.
Nice.
So 5-6 years later, my buddy Joe goes, "Hey, these guys are like in these rock bands, man. These like famous British bands, you know. Boys Are Backing Down had just come out.
Right. Well, that's where he met Philip Lynott.
Super Tramp had done Crisis and Crime of the Century, I guess, you know. And so we're going, wow, dig these cats, you know, like dig what happened to them. They were smart, you know, they're in rock and roll, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm knocking around LA, and there was a club in Burbank, California, actually Toluca Lake. It's kind of an offshoot of Burbank, called Jason's.
Mm.
At Jason's was like a social hang for musicians and for people hanging out. There was a band there that played a lot. There was a guy named Scott Page, who was a saxophone player that played with Supertramp, Toto, and ultimately Pink Floyd. Mm. He had a band that played at this club. I used to go hang out there. Mm. So one night, it's in 79, I think it's 79, and I'm at this club drinking a beer, and these two guys walk in the door. Mm. I'm like, you guys, what are you doing here? You know, because I'm thinking they're in England, you know.
Right, right.
And they go, oh, well, Bob's band Supertramp is mixing this new album at Crystal in Hollywood. Mm. And so we just came over the hill and we stopped in. Well, they stopped in every night. Mm. Like they were there after the mix sessions every night. So guess who else was there every night? Me and everybody else that wanted to hang with him, you know.
Right, right.
So it was like, okay, it's 11 o'clock. Let's head to Jason's because Bobby and Scott are going to come over, right?
Mm.
Anyway, they finished that. They finished the mixes of Breakfast in America.
Great album.
And Bobby shows up with a cassette. Mm. And he goes, who's got a boombox at their pad? And so a bunch of us pile in a car at like 2:30 in the morning, and we go to somebody's house, and he puts this thing on, and all our jaws are on the floor. I mean, we're literally cross-legged on the floor listening to this boombox of this cassette of this album, and it's so obvious that this is monumental. This is going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just gonna go freaking crazy. You just knew it, you know.
It was very different, yes. Mm-hmm. And it was
so. What happens is that record happens. Bobby goes on the road, makes a ton of money from that record, and from touring. Mm. Buys a new house, outfits it with a complete studio. Mm. Scott Gorham and I start a band, and we start recording at Bobby's house.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm up at Bobby's house all the time, and Supertramp's working on their follow-up album called Famous Last Words.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Hodgson and Rick Davies are at odds, and Roger has been threatening to not even play guitar on Rick Davies' songs. Rick Davies, who I had met because I know Bobby and I'm at Bob's house all the time, asked me, he says, look, I want to hire you to come to the studio, Bill Schnees, for a night to play with the guys. I just want to, and he tells me the story. He says, I don't know if Roger's going to play on my songs, so I need to figure this out. Would you come? I'll pay your cartage bill. I'll pay you the session fee, whatever you need.
But we're
just going to jam. We're not going to record or anything.
Right.
We're just going to have headphones on. We're going to play. We're going to play some of these new songs I got, and we're going to see how it all kind of unfolds. So I wind up doing that. And then Roger does the album. And so that's the end of that story. They go on the road. They're back on the road. They come out with Famous Last Words.
Right.
They have some hits. Roger quits the band.
Right. Threaten away, Roger. Go ahead, by all means, right? Go ahead.
So Rick calls me up, you know, after that and says, we're going to carry on as a four-piece band. I got David Kirschenbaum is going to produce our new album.
Right.
I need to hire you to do the sessions.
Cool.
So I get hired to do all of the basic tracks. I go into Ocean Way with those guys for, I don't know, 2 weeks or something like that. And we cut all this music.
Mm.
The album's called Brother, Where Are You Bound? And I did 90% of the guitar work on it. They brought David Gilmour in. They had this extensive song that was like 16 minutes long, the title track, Brother, Where Are You Bound? And they wanted to make a big splash with, you know, and so they brought David Gilmour in to play guitar, who they always loved.
No idea, right? David Gilmour was involved. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So David plays this incredible solo on this 16-minute piece.
Mm.
And then Rick calls and says, we're going on the road. Do you want to go? And I'm like, yeah, I'm in. So I wound up going on the road touring with them in 86, 85, 86, and then again in 88. They did another record, and they brought me back in. Mm. Here I am again, sitting in the studio with these guys, you know, cranking out this album called Free as a Bird. And we toured on that record, and then Rick decided to make a solo record, and so he spent years and years and years and years working on that.
Wow.
And then, but he didn't want to use any of the Supertramp guys. He made a solo record with all other LA recording kind of studio cats. Carl Verheyen did all the guitar stuff, and But then when it was all said and done, he kind of decided, well, it was kind of smarter to call it a Supertramp record. So what he did is he brought Bobby back in to replace the drum tracks.
Right.
And he brought John Halliwell in to play saxophone on it. And they put it out as another Supertramp record in 96,
right.
97 in there somewhere, you know.
Wow, fantastic. I mean, it was just an excellent time to be in music between the 60s and the 80s, you know. I mean, I want to say you stepped in shit, but you didn't, because you know what? Your talent just spoke for itself. You know what I mean? But you definitely were at the right place at the right time, but your talent carried you there anyway. But now,
hey,
real quick.
Hey, Marty, I got a question for Marty. Marty,
sure.
What do you think the future for the guitar is? Because I'm hearing that, you know, a lot of the places that sell guitars, like Guitar Center, they're closing up. They're not selling that many guitars. Not many people want to go through the trouble of learning how to play the guitar. And I haven't really heard of any band that has a really good guitar player in you know, the 2000s. There's no guitar players that, you know what I'm saying? It's sort of like all the guitar players.
There's no music with real guitar players.
And I want to know what if you're teaching at Berkeley, are there guitar players who want to pursue a career playing the guitar, or is, you know, that kind of dead? Because it's very sad if it is.
Right.
Well, look, here's my thought about that. We're in a place now where guitar is out of fashion. And so the music that's being produced doesn't.
Music is out of fashion. Put it that way.
I really disagree with that because look, I work with these young kids at school.
I'm talking about what's on the radio right now. That's what I'm talking about.
But you know, there's great music out there. There is great music.
But it's not being played.
Go listen to ZZ Ward.
Yeah.
She's great. Go listen to Alice Merton. She's phenomenal. Go listen to a number of these bands, Tame Impala. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of bands that are happening.
I know, Marty, but they're not playing it. That's the problem.
They're gigging. They're playing shows.
No, I'd
they're
love
out
to
there,
see
they're
them
out
live.
There doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's we're talking about kind of a complex issue, but here's
exactly
to answer the question that you posed, right? The future of guitar, give it another 5 years and some kid is going to start a band playing guitar and they're going to do the new thing and all the kids are going to be doing that. Did you watch the Grammys this year? This year?
Yeah.
Who was that girl, that young 18-year-old girl who's out there doing a hip-hop tune, and what's she doing? She's playing a Stratocaster, and she played a freaking guitar solo.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't remember her name.
It's out of fashion right now because this is where music is right now.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's gone. Kids go to school. They go to high school. If they don't play sports, they got to do something.
Right.
A lot of them gear themselves towards music. So now, right now, a lot of them are buying laptops. They got samples and they're doing their beats and they're doing all that stuff.
Right.
So maybe it will never come back. But you know, you can make your beat and do your sample thing, and that's fine. But there's something about learning to play an actual instrument that motivates people, and I see it all the time at Berkeley.
I see it in
the high school kids. The high school kids that I work with. The high school summer program at Berkeley had more students in it playing live instruments than they had ever had in the history of the high school summer program, which is like 40 years old.
call.
So tell me that's not happening.
Right.
Right now, it's out of fashion. But
right.
That doesn't mean anything. It's
right.
coming back.
So let
you
me
know.
Ask.
I
oh, Marty, so. You know what? I called you on the wrong number tonight. I am so sorry. I just found a note here.
That's no problem. Hey, that's why I didn't answer it.
Exactly. Now I know why.
Because it was on my cell phone, and I'm going, who is this people? I don't know these people.
I know. I'm in the studio with papers scrawled all over, and I just found this note, Marty. Blah, 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 blah. That's where I was supposed to call you. I'm so sorry. Well, speaking of birthday,
I mean, we have clarity. I mean, there's clarity on the line, right?
Definitely, definitely.
Oh, yeah, okay. As long as that's happening, we're cool.
Yeah. So speaking of Berkeley, how did that happen
yeah.
for you? What do you teach? Are you teaching not guitar? Are you teaching, method?
No. You know, and Joanne, you're learning about me because you asked me a question, and I'm going to have to take the whole side road and tell you how it all happened.
Of course.
If you want.
That's what
yeah,
we want.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the 90s, right? It's the 90s, and I see that that digital's happening. I'm not going to have to live in Los Angeles to make a living doing music because I'm writing more music for television than I'm doing sessions.
Right.
And I'm going, okay, I'm driving DAT tapes down to the office. I said, I got a FedEx box anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife is from Massachusetts. I got two kids. I'm looking at L.A., the gangster thing, a lot of stuff. I'm the only one with the kids in my family. There's no really, you know, family hang for us. My wife's got a family that's extensive. She got, you know, three siblings. Everybody's got kids. It's like a whole thing over here in Massachusetts, right?
Right, right.
So I convince her. She didn't want to do this. I convince her. I say, listen, why don't we take our family? Let's move it to Massachusetts. I'm going to open up a studio in wherever we are. We'll buy a house where I can put my studio because I had a studio in L.A., but I never used it for any outside projects.
Mm.
I only did it for stuff that I was working on. I never brought in, you know, I never advertised or tried to get clients. But I said, in Massachusetts, I'm the only guy. If I show up there, I'm the only guy that can hang a gold record on the wall.
Right, right.
There's nobody in Boston that can put it. There's nobody in Boston that's played on any hits.
Well, I wanted to say to you, you were calling the clubs that you played in Sheds, and you named your studio Shed. So now I know where you got
the Shed. Yeah. Well, that's another story. But look, I said, I've played on a bunch of hit records. I can probably go open up a studio, put all the gold records on the wall, take out some ads in the trades. People will find my studio. They'll walk in and they'll see the fact that I played on 9 to 5. She Works Hard for the Money, you know, and all these other records. And Heartlight, Neil Diamond, Eddie Money. I got a picture sitting up here. I'm looking at it of me meeting Princess Di with the Supertramp guys,
nice.
And they're gonna hire me.
Right.
You know.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. So
yeah.
That's what I did. And at the same time, I said, look, I was talking to Berklee College of Music before I even arrived.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to those guys a year before I got here. And I said, hey, you know, do you think there would be a possibility? I'm talking to some guys in the guitar department. And they said, yes, but, you know, you have to interview, and we're looking for a specific thing. I go interview for a position as soon as I get here. They've got a position open at Berklee. And I go interview for it. Now, the problem is, I've left all of my studio, like I'm a session guitarist.
Mm.
I left all of that stuff in Los Angeles.
Mm.
It's all sitting in a warehouse in L.A.
Because
I knew I was going to be flying. Yeah, I was going to fly back and forth from Massachusetts to Los Angeles because people were going to still call. And if I get an album call for a week, I'm going to go fly to L.A. and do this record.
Right,
So I left all of my stuff there. And so I told the guys at Berklee, I said, listen, I'm here. I would love to work with you guys. You have to know that, you know, I'm still kind of viable in Los Angeles. I'm still doing stuff there. There may be times when I'm, you know, when I've got to be out of town.
Mm.
Bottom line is I didn't get the gig. They didn't hire me.
Oh.
So I don't know exactly why, but I think that might have been the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, but times, you know, it's moving on. And now I moved in 96. It's now 2003. And I say, okay, wait a second. The L.A. thing is dried up. I had done a bunch of work out of a studio in Texas with a girl named Leanne Rimes, country singer, with Curb Records. We had done all kinds of Curb Records projects.
Nice.
That was going away. The guy that did all of that said, Marty, Leanne's going to LA to make a rock record. All the other stuff that we're doing with Curb is going away. I said, okay, I'm going to go knock on the door at Berkeley again. So I went and knocked on the ensemble department door this time, not the guitar department. So I said, look, if I've got an expertise, it's actually not in guitar so much, which, I mean, I guess it is, but I thought, you know, I would much rather work with bands. I'd rather be in a room with a band. So, you know, and that's my background, doing records, playing with music with people in bands, you know. So so I knocked on the door at Berkeley, and they needed teachers. And Ron Savage over there, God bless him, brought me into the school to, and he, you know, I had three classes that were kind of ensemble-ish kind of classes, working with guitar players and, you know, keyboard, drums, bass, you know. And I've been there, I've just started my 16th year.
Wow.
And, you know, I started out with these kind of remedial classes, and I've worked it into some really, really great stuff. I mean, I have a class there called the L.A. Studio Ensemble. It mimics what we used to do in L.A. back in the session days where you know, the phone rings, they say, can you be at this studio on this day at this time? And you take the call, but you don't know what you're getting into.
Right,
you just show up.
Right,
and now you've got to perform, and you got to play three tunes in 3 hours, and you got to figure out how to do it fast.
Right.
So I created this class that we do exactly that. And I've been doing it for 10 years, and one of the things that we do every semester is we do a sound alike, right? Mm. We copy a tune verbatim. Mm. So the big one that I did was My Old School by Steely Dan.
Oh.
It just passed 40,000 views on YouTube.
Wow, I gotta check it out.
And I get comments from all of these people. And I'll get them every day. I get one. A week I'm going to get 7 to 10, and they say, "This is unbelievable. You have, the future of music is in good hands because these kids can play My Old School, and they play it, and it sounds like Steely Dan."
Well, then again,
I mean, the horns, the background vocals, the whole thing, the guitar solo, the whole thing is amazing, you know.
Well, there you were again, right time, right place and all that, and there you go, your talents carry.
Isn't that amazing, Joanne?
Yeah, I wish I was you. Anyway, you started, now these kids, when they come in and you tell them all the bands you played with, I mean, do they have a clue?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, when I started 16 years ago, here's what I used to say.
But I'm sure you're turning them on to some great music.
Well, yeah, you know. Yeah. But more so than that, I'm telling them about having a career in the entertainment business.
Right.
That's the most important thing I'm doing.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, look, I can help them, you know, in their musical thing in my one class that I have with them. I mean, I got to take a whole shitload, whole bunch of classes, so I can help them out, you know. But I think the best thing I do is the advice that I give them on, okay, look, this is how it works, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to work in the entertainment industry, the first thing you need to do is to understand. You need humility, and don't be an asshole.
Right.
You got to be cool. People want to know if you're a good hang on the bus. That's what they want to know.
Right.
Everybody can play. Everybody can produce. Everybody can make beats. Everybody can sing. Everybody can do it. They want to know, are you cool? That's number one.
Right. You know? Taking your class, I mean, at Berkeley in Boston, guys, if anybody's interested in doing that, what Marty teaches you, you can't learn out of a book. This is experience, and this is something that is not taught in a book. He can only teach
it. We're coming to the end of the show, so does Marty have anything that he wants to tell us that he's doing, a book or anything?
I wanted to tell us about you started your own label, Martonius. Do you accept unsolicited material?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just, you know, that's kind of a bit of a hoot, you know. I mean, I've been doing at my home studio, because I don't really need to produce outside projects, although I just took one on, ironically. But I thought, you know, I want to do some music that I love. And I produced a woman a while back, and you know, I released one of her songs on TuneCore. Nobody's heard it. You know,
Darcell
Wilson. Yeah, it's great. It's a great song. It's called Choose Happy.
choose happy. Come on. We live in a world where nobody's happy. Let's choose happy. I mean, you know what I mean? And then there was another tune I did with a friend that, you know, he went way, way back. And, you know, we had analog tape of a thing we did back in the early 80s. And we transferred it and we worked hard on it. And I put that out. You know, I have to get away. It's kind of a bit of a hoot. It's just fun because you can put anything out on the internet. You can do TuneCore. You can have a record label on TuneCore because you just do it, you know.
All right.
But I mean, the biggest one is if you want to hear my guitar playing, you can get my album called The Total Plan.
That's what I was going to ask you. Where can people find out about where they can get your stuff? And
you can get it on, if you go to my website, there's a link to buy it, martywalsh.com. There's a link to get it on eBay. But you can listen to it on Spotify. It's on Spotify. It's on, you know, it's called The Total Plan. It's got 28 musicians. It's all of these people that I've worked with over the years. I called them all in to play on one song for me. And it was a labor of love. It took me 10 years to do it. And I absolutely love it. It's an instrumental record. It's an instrumental guitar record, but it's not a jazz record that's going to make you go, oh, you know, the guy's playing too many notes. It's fun. It's pop music. It's basically pop songs that I turn into instrumental tunes. So they're very accessible to the general public, you know.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, are you thinking of be touring anytime soon, or no? You're pretty much
I don't know. I mean, I've run down New York, Rhode Island, New York, where Rick Davies lives. I want to say Eastport. It's not freaking Eastport. But anyway, I've done some shows with Rick down there. I play with a band here called Antrim every now and again, but I don't really feature doing any more road stuff. I mean, you know, I'm going back to L.A. to do a couple of records, one in January with a producer named Jeff Weber, and Vinnie Colaiuta is going to be on it along with Marco Mendoza and on bass. And I'm going to play on another record with a young Australian artist that Jeff has booked me on in June. So I'm still doing some stuff. I'm around,
excellent.
You know.
Excellent. Well, all the best to you, Marty, and thank you so much for sharing. I mean, I enjoyed this so much. I love everything that you've done and amazing stories. And just want to make a quick announcement for somebody you probably know. Pete Bremmy from Vanilla Fudge, his band is going to be playing over here in Butler, New Jersey. He's got the Vanilla Fudge and the Plasmatics, they're a power trio, and they're featuring Peg Pearl. You can catch them at the Fusion Cafe October 4th. This week on the show, on the 25th, Wednesday, we have Susan Jacks. She sang Which Way You Going, Billy, but we may have to push her aside for just a day because we're not sure if we're going to have Joan Jett or one of the ladies from Heart on because they're playing at the Prudential Center on the 27th. So it's possible we may have one of those ladies on with us the 25th, and we're not sure yet. So we'll know 100%. But, Marty, thank you.
You got a great lineup, Joanne.
We're doing our best. We're trying to get, you know, eventually everybody will like somebody we have on. And you know what? I love everybody we have on, so I don't really care.
that's great.
Tell them about the psychic, Joanne. The psychic.
Oh, yes. And on October 6th. We have the Jersey Shore Angel. She's a medium. She wrote the book Fallen Angel, and she considers herself a fallen angel. And she can tell you about your loved ones, possibly a couple things about what's going on in your life at the moment. We're going to take calls, and she's going to read you. So that's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for that. That's another thing I'm into. So I like that. So if anybody wants to join us for that show, we'll be promoting that very soon, too. But Marty, you can come back anytime. My God, you could talk forever. You got so many stories to tell.
Yeah, you know, bring me back in 6 months. We'll talk about Sinatra and Michael Jackson.
Sounds great. Well, thank
okay.
you so
thank
much,
you, Marty.
Everybody. Marty Walsh, the greatest
all right,
guitar
guys,
player
Marty.
Ever. Thank you, Marty. Pleasure.
All right.
Have a good
all
night.
Right. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Take care, honey.
Okay.
Good night, everybody,
bye-bye.
And we'll see you
bye.
On Sunday.
Yes.
So we'll see you on Wednesday,
no,
right?
Wednesday. Yes,
yes
we'll
Wednesday.
Know who we have for sure very soon. Thank you again,
well,
Marty
Wednesday.
Walsh. Wednesday.
Well, Wednesday
is
used to be
25th.
Sunday at Carvel, remember? Wednesday,
yes,
Sunday
yes.
at Carvel, I get them confused.
Yes.
All right, so we'll see you guys on Wednesday. Everybody,
yes, thank
take
you again,
care,
Marty
and good
Walsh.
Night.
And don't forget, go back and listen to the show. We'll post it. You can listen to it. And don't forget to check us out at applauseradioshow.com. Thank you all. John, have a good night, honey. I love you.
Good night. Bye-bye, everyone.
Night. Bye.